Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth. My name is Vishal Tekshanani, and I'm NabTrade's Customer Insights Manager. This week, our regular host, Gemma Dale, is taking a well-earned break, so I'm filling in for her, and I have the delight of speaking to NAB Chief Economist Alan Oster about one of this nation's most fabled pastimes, the state of the property market. Alan is an immensely experienced and well-respected economist who's been in the finance industry for over 40 years, and he's responsible for NAB's global and financial forecast. He and his team produce an excellent quarterly update on the housing sector called the NAB Residential Property Survey. This survey could serve as very valuable information for investors looking at the property market or even for investors just wanting to observe general economic trends as part of their investment research. Alan, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Great. So, Alan, before we get into the details of the findings of the survey, can you just give our audience a bit of a background on the NAB Residential Property Survey? What's this designed to tell people who are interested in the property market?
So what we do is we go out and we survey something like 500 experts in the property market. So think real estate agents, think people who invest in any sort of property. We ask them about how they're seeing the market, confidence, what's happening in each of the various states. We ask them for a price forecast, and we also attach to the same report our own forecasts. And so it tries to give a view about what's actually happening in the market. The other thing that it gets a lot of attention for is it gives an estimate of how many, or basically how much foreigners in the market, both domestically in terms of the residential property and new property, particularly things like apartments.
Okay, and so you crunch all this data into a sentiment reading, is that right?
Yes, that's basically
Okay, so your team released the survey for the first quarter of 2018 very recently. So what were the major findings during the first 3 months of the year?
Well, what it's basically saying is that the sentiment indicator was up a little bit. So it's above long-run average, but in some ways it was looking at the headline is sort of missing the main story, because what we're seeing is we're seeing New South Wales and Victoria slowing. Yep. But what we're also seeing is quite strong numbers, well, relatively strong numbers in the West. In other words, it's not as bad as it was. And we're also seeing, particularly in Queensland, a bit of a pickup.
Okay, so the index, so this survey provides what's called the NAB Residential Property Index, which rose 3 points to plus 23, right? What does that mean? If an investor was to look at plus 23, what does it say?
Well, the long run average is about plus 18, plus 19. So it's saying that relative to what we've had for a long time, the property market is still okay. But what it's also saying is it's weakening in New South Wales and in Victoria, but it's being offset by some of the markets elsewhere, and particularly the idea that Western Australia stopped falling.
Okay. So you've got multiple speeds across the different states, which is very interesting. And look, we often talk about Sydney and Melbourne, and so we'll de-emphasize that for the purpose of this podcast, because we always talk about Sydney and Melbourne. What I found most fascinating was that Hobart looks like it's going to shoot the lights out in terms of relative performance. And like you said, Perth is on the rebound after two consecutive years of falling. What's going on in these cities?
Well, Hobart is really difficult to sort of figure out what's going on. I think it may well be some money coming out of Sydney, Melbourne and going elsewhere. It is true, however, that when we look at the Tasmanian economy in our business surveys, they actually produce quite high readings. So I think there's a bit of, if you like, some improvement in the fundamental economy, which is showing up in the property prices. In Western Australia, I think it's more that you've hit bottom, is really the sort of bottom line. And as you said, we've had now 3 years in a row of falling house prices in Perth. And this year we're expecting something like plus one. So it's not that things are getting much better, it's just that they're stopped falling.
Okay, and is that indicative of the rebound in reserves?
And
also money flowing out of Sydney and Melbourne? Is that
I think in Western Australia what you've got is you're now getting the mining operations doing reasonably well because commodity prices have come up. They're not building anything new anymore, and they've sort of scaled back. And whilst unemployment is still high, we're seeing in our business survey, for example, mining is now the best performing sector, which is pretty unusual because it's been the worst performing sector for about 4 or 5 years. And now I think really what you're seeing in Western Australia is a closing of the gap that, you know, what we've had was for the last couple of years, New South Wales and Victoria were the strong states. And Western Australia was terrible. Yeah. So if you look at business conditions, long run average is typically around plus five in terms of our indicators. New South Wales and Victoria were something like plus 12, plus 15, and Western Australia was minus 10. Okay. And now Western Australia is sort of plus five. Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, more like plus 8, plus 15, that sort of range. So it's still strong, but the gap has closed a lot.
Okay, that's good to know. And of course, we can't forget about our friends in Adelaide and Brisbane specifically. So do you want to just go into more detail about what we're seeing and what you're forecasting in those cities?
Well, in Adelaide, basically, it's a pretty flat market.
Yep.
And so we're expecting no...
City.
Yeah. So we're expecting no sort of change in house prices.
Yep.
In the year, and Brisbane a little bit better, but I think Brisbane you need to be really careful because if you're talking about the mining cities and you know the far north of Queensland, that's really poor. Mm. But if you're looking at Brisbane, that's really strong. So you get this, and so across the state you get very different readings according to which particular place you're in. And for example, if you're looking at Queensland, unemployment is like 6%.
Yep.
You go to places like Gladstone, unemployment is 12.
Yeah.
So you get these very big differences by region across Queensland.
So, you know, people shouldn't generalise Queensland. There are parts of Queensland which are hotter than the others.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, okay. And Alan, so we've talked about house prices, but your forecast and the sentiment here is about the same for units as well, right?
In units, what we're seeing is a little bit more... weakness, I suppose, is what we're saying. And again, you need to specifically look at which units you're talking about. So are you talking about the CBD where we think there's quite significant weakness? But if I'm talking about Sydney units, we're for the first time getting a negative number for our forecast for unit prices. We've got Melbourne has been hanging on better than people thought. We expected there was an overbuild, particularly in the CBD, and that would be showing up in forecasts.
Yeah, you constantly heard about Melbourne, this overbuilding of shoebox units.
And that is in the CBD, and it's probably true that there are some parts of the CBD where unit prices are falling 20%. But if you're thinking about the total Melbourne unit prices, which includes a lot of other buildings around the various suburbs, they're going up a little bit. So again, it's almost like you know, someone says you're going to buy a unit and, you know, what's the price going to do? You need to know which suburb it's in. If it's in the CBD, I would still be very, very, very cautious. And Brisbane unit prices are falling down as well, but that's more general. And particularly if you're looking at any weakness, Brisbane is very weak in terms of the market, both for the residential and also for commercial. They're really poor.
Okay, so when investors are looking at this report, in line with what you said, you know, look very, very carefully.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
CBD versus outer suburbs, yeah. Far north Queensland versus southeast Queensland.
And so what NAB has gone on record as saying that there's about 60 postcodes we don't like. And by that, most of them are far north Queensland, Northern Territory, the Pilbara, Perth, and southern parts of Tassie. Now, 60 postcodes is about 1% of postcodes. Yep. It explains about 50% of our bad debts.
Oh, wow.
So you really do need to understand that this is a postcode story.
Hmm.
And so you need to be careful when you're looking at the aggregate numbers,
right.
And sort of settle it down. But if we're looking at big picture, in the housing market, what three things matter?
Sure.
Number one, supply demand, have you overbuilt? Number two, interest rates, and number three, do you have a job? And what we're saying is in the housing market, if you forget about the unit markets temporarily, the housing market, Sydney, Melbourne is still underbuilt.
Yeah.
Queensland, Western Australia are slightly overbuilt, the others are sort of flat. So there's no massive overbuild. Interest rates are not going up anytime soon. And unemployment at the aggregate level is fine. Yeah. So it's a postcode story. Now, if you go looking at the unit market, they are significantly overbuilt in the CBDs in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of that, though, is foreign money. And, you know, we don't know exactly how much, but, you know, typically you find things like 15% of new apartments are foreign owned. And and when you're in the CBD, we think up to 80% of those those apartments are foreign owned.
Okay.
So you do need to be very careful in looking in general. But I suppose what I'm saying is, based on the fundamentals, you would not expect to see a hard landing. You would expect to see essentially things going sideways. And that's really what we've seen.
Okay, and this is a great segue into the next question, which is, you mentioned foreign buyers, and one piece of detail I love about this survey is that it looks at the composition of property buyers over the next 12 months. So can you talk through what you're seeing there?
Well, what in terms of foreign buyers, what we've seen over the last year or so is a slowdown in foreign purchases, particularly in the apartment market, and also some slowing in essentially the housing market. But generally the sort of story is 15% of units across Australia are foreign owned, or new ones coming on are foreign owned, and about 5% have been in the unit in the housing market. Recently, we've seen those numbers fall to a 6-year low. So in other words, the combination of cracking down on foreigners, putting up some taxes, if you like, have made people less inclined to come to Australia. In the March quarter, it went up a little bit, but not much. Over the next 12 to 18 months, the expectations are that the demand for foreigners is going to come down.
Okay.
And really what that is about is there's a limit to how many units you can build.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost like, if you think about like a python that swallows a pig, and you can see the pig going through the python's stomach.
That's a great way to put it.
that's sort of what we're going to see in terms of activity. So we expect to see activity levels come off, and we don't expect to see a lot of foreigners starting up new stuff.
Yeah.
And really that's what we're talking about here.
Okay, so is it going to be first home buyers and first home investors really leading the charge in terms of who's going to be attending these auctions?
We're now seeing record levels of first home owners coming in. That was the other thing in the survey. And, you know, in some cases it's because people have changed stamp duty rules. Other cases that they're looking at units, not necessarily in the CBD, but they can't afford the house, but you can afford a unit. And so people are looking at that. But they're looking at units that 2 bedrooms or 3 bedrooms sort of thing, rather than a dog box.
Okay. So this survey also covers rents, which of course, if you're an investor, is a significant part of the equation when investing in a dwelling. Or if you're a renter, it gives you a gauge of how much your cost of living is going to increase. So what are the forecasts there, and what's the sentiment?
Well, when we ask about rents, generally the expectation in the next 12 months is for growth of rents of about 1.4%. When we did this survey in the December quarter, it was 1.3. So the expectations is not much increase in rents. And that's what you'd sort of expect if you're in a situation, particularly in the unit market, where there's been an oversupply and people are having trouble in selling their units.
So, Alan, if an investor is considering investing in a property for rent, do they have to be, you know, in line with your same comment about house prices?
It's very much that house prices is driving the return.
Right.
So if house prices are weakening, it's because, you know, people are concerned. They're also weakening, so the rental return is not going to be going up if you've got a trouble in terms of getting someone in.
Okay, so do landlords generally have less bargaining power in this phase in 2018?
I think they probably do, and that's the expectations. And you know, we put the rents in with the prices when we put together our total property index. So it's sort of a combination of the price plus the rent.
So let's focus on what these forecasts could mean from a macroeconomic perspective. So NAB is expecting house prices to fall in Sydney and the momentum in Melbourne to weaken. So these are two of the strongest economic zones in the country, among the strongest economic zones even. What does that mean for the wider economy?
It means the consumer is going to stay cautious. And what we see is we see a consumer that basically is not getting very much in terms of wage increases. They've had big increases of utility prices and the value of their property is going sideways. It's not going up anymore. So, and they've got a lot of debt. So the consumer's gonna buy what they think they must have, but going to be very careful on discretionary retail. And that's what we've seen for a while. So it sort of says, we don't expect the consumer to be, particularly in the discretionary space, to be shooting the lights out. So that's a slowdown. Offsetting that, you've got a lot of infrastructure going on in Sydney and Melbourne. You've also got some signs that there's quite strong profits, and part of that is slowly being put into business investment. So there's sort of some of the offset. So, and then from a GDP point of view, a lot of the LNG platforms that they've been building for years are now starting to export. So you will get this artificial increase in GDP, but unless you own an LNG platform, and none of us really do, then
for the general population, it doesn't mean much.
Yeah, it probably means you've got an economy that's going to be growing 2.75, 2.5 sort of thing in for the population. Our actual GDP numbers are like 2.8 and then 2.6. But generally, domestic parts of demand is going to be at best around where it is now.
Okay. So you mentioned consumers being cautious on discretionary spending, and we've heard the governor of the RBA talk about that switch from interest-only loans to P&I loans. Yep. And certainly if I was to think about that, I own my own house, if I was to start paying additional principal, well, obviously I'd have less discretionary income. So do you expect that to compound the pain in terms of discretionary spending?
Well, so far it's not really showing a lot of signs of that, but it's not going in the right direction. It's probably the... So it's... If you're saying, you know, you're being kicked out of your fixed home loan and you're going into a variable, therefore you've got to pay more cash. Yeah. It means that effectively you're not got as much as you had, and you're going to be careful. Now, maybe you're going to, you're almost certainly going to get tax cuts in the budget, which might help ease it a bit, but it is just another one of the factors that just says consumer is going to be cautious. And so we're not seeing a sort of any signs of stress in a major way there, because a lot of the interest-only loans in the systemic sense are actually taken by wealthy people who have loan offset accounts. And so the amount of people that are taking the interest only because they can not afford anything else is actually smaller than you might think if you read the newspapers. So at this stage, it's not helping, but it's not causing a lot of grief.
So Alan, I just want to touch on potential policy that that could change if Labor comes in. You know, of course, this is a big this has been a big talking point in the media. So Labor's proposed cuts to the capital gains tax discount and negative gearing, and of course, they've got a policy on franking credits as well. So the net effect is that the tax system could potentially be less generous if they're elected and if these things go through. And at the same time, we're having a debate about immigration numbers. So if these changes happen, do you think sentiment will be impacted and there could be a further effect on house prices and you know, people even looking to buy houses for investing?
I think you've got to remember that if you do get a change of government, number one, they've got to get their policies through the Senate, and so it's at least 12 months down the track, at least. The one thing you can generally say is that if you lower the immigration levels, that has a direct impact on the housing market. So in rough terms, you know, 10 people come here, you build 2.5 extra houses, roughly. So if you slow that significantly, that will have a direct effect on the construction industry. Negative gearing and those things are much more difficult to tell. It was only ever in for 12 months or 18 months, and it was difficult to sort of see what actually happened, because the rent, if you think about it, if you change your rent, most people have a 12-month contract, and so you don't expect to see a big change in the rents at the time, but it was starting to build up. I think I would be cautious about negative gearing. I think probably it would lower house prices as you go out. But the actual modelling of what the Labor Party has said, you can't do. So it's really difficult. I think it would probably not be positive to house prices. It probably isn't going to crash the market, but it wouldn't be positive, and that would probably hurt the economy in some ways. But on the other hand, they're probably going to have a more stimulatory fiscal position.
Yeah, right.
So you just, you know,
it's a big guessing game, right? It's a big guessing game. And I think, yeah, investors and people listening to this really need to remember that they're not even elected yet, firstly.
So it's a long term down the track, and, you know, they've got to get their things through the Senate, and I'm sure the Senate won't be any better in the next parliament from the government's point of view. And so, you know, I think you want to be care. I wouldn't be making investment decisions based on what something might happen.
I wouldn't be shorting the housing market just yet, if I could add a dad joke in there. Okay, so, so we've talked about potential policy risks on the horizon. Let's look at it from a global perspective. And if I look at the property survey, and if I look at NAB's forecasts, an aggregate forecast of a 0.8% decline in 2018 across the capital cities, and a 0.8% increase in 2019. So, you know,
sideways.
Do you think there's any potential black swan events? I don't know if it's North Korea, if it's Trump, if it's something that could hammer the property market and bring to fruition those doomsday forecasts you always hear about. Hey, the Australian housing market's going to crash by 30-40%. Is there something that could happen that investors should maybe ponder about?
It's very difficult to know. If you're looking just at the economy of the world at present, it actually is getting better. And so we look at our growth numbers, and just we're at 3.8% global growth this year, and that's the strongest we've had for a long time. What makes you slightly nervous is whether you get into a trade war between China and the US. North Korea, who knows? But Trump has sort of started part of that, and you just need to see what will actually happen. Now, I actually think they'll probably do out a deal somehow. And if you just have what Trump's announced is $50 billion worth of imports from China, they're going to put a tariff on. And the Chinese have reciprocated. Those numbers are tiny. But what you worry more about would be it then develops a momentum, and then Trump says, he has said, I'll have a look at another $100 billion. And who knows where you get. And so what you would need is something unexpected that would crash the global economy. And that's the only thing I can think of that is an all-out trade war. And the chances of that are probably less than 10%. But you never can say never. And so the problem, what would happen there is that you get unemployment up above 8%, and then you get a crash into the residential market, and, you know, we're all doomed. But I mean, reality is that's pretty unlikely. And I think really just people need to watch, and that's why the equity markets have sort of discounted the idea. Now, you know, you have some funny sort of reactions because Trump's suddenly now talking again about joining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which he pulled out of, which was like a big multilateral trade deal that included everybody except the US. Now he's saying this again, and then he suddenly, despite all this talk about tariffs, he suddenly says the Chinese are good guys and we'll work something out. So there's obviously something going on privately, and so you just don't know where it'll go. So that's the main black swan event that you'd worry about.
Okay, and just a last one on macroeconomic policy. House price, your house price forecasts, how do they feed into the monetary outlook in terms of the RBA?
Look, I think if the Reserve Bank was looking at flat house prices for the next couple of years, they'd say that's pretty good. They would say that the consumer, what worries them more is about, will the consumer start to get some wage rises? And if they don't get any wage rises, the consumer's unlikely to basically increase their spending. And if you don't get increases in spending in a fundamental sense in growth rates, the economy sort of limps along a bit at about 2.75, 2.5-ish, which is sort of where we're at. And I think in that sort of environment, the Reserve Bank is going to be very, very cautious. So in terms of rate rises, we have one rate rise at the end of this year, but it will only happen if you start to see some wage pressures developing. It should have developed, it hasn't. So you're looking at private sector wages growing at less than 2%, and you're looking at utility prices growing at 20%. And then people are worried about debt and all that sort of stuff. So I think the Reserve is going to be very, very cautious. So we have the start of an interest rate, as I said, a raise by the end of the year, but it would not surprise me if they didn't start until the middle of next year. And they will still go very carefully. They're not going to whack up rates 2 or 3% straight away. That is not going to happen. Okay. They're going to really look at the economy.
Wonderful. Alan, these are fascinating insights, and I think these are so useful for investors to monitor if they're looking at the property market and, like I said at the beginning, if they just want to observe general economic trends. So I just want to thank you for your time, and I'd just like to ask as well, you and the team produce some other great economic updates and insights, such as the NAB Business Survey, which many of our listeners, I'm sure, would be keen to get access to. Where would they find those?
They're all online. And so I just go to the NAB's website and pick it up there. Alternatively, they can just send emails and we'll send them out to them.
No worries. Thank you so much for your time, Alan. Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
That was Alan Oster. To our audience, please note you can access the latest NAB residential property survey through a link that we've included in the Your Wealth podcast email. And we'll also mention the areas of the NAB website where you can access those great insights from the NAB economics team. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Wealth. We always love to hear from you. So if you have any feedback or suggestions even for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Vishal Tekshanani. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.